And this next panel is a Lacey Act panel. And gosh, I don't know if I should admit this here, but I'm a Lacey Act violator. The very first reptiles I ever owned were Lacey Act violations. In 1972, my family came down to Texas and visited my family farm up in Childress, Texas. And while I was there, I discovered these neat things called hermit toads. You may not see them around Texas anymore. Fire ants and pesticides and cats and a variety of things have done a pretty good number on them. But in 1972, the horny toad was protected by the state of Texas. And as a 9-year-old, I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was a law to protect them. And I sure didn't know that there was a law to protect them from me taking them out of the state of Texas back up to Indiana. So we took a big bucket full of horny toads, I think there were 12 of them, all the way back up to Indiana. And thus, I started my life as a wildlife criminal at 9 years old. So the Lacey Act is out there to prevent people from taking animals from one state where it's illegal and crossing state lines with it. And that's obviously what we did. We quietly made a donation to the Indianapolis Zoo. And if there are any horny toads in Indianapolis at the zoo, they're probably progeny from those animals that we surreptitiously donated. Maybe I should preface this whole discussion by asking what the statute of limitations on the Lacey Act violations were, but I digress. So let's go ahead and start with the Lacey Act presentation. We're going to look at a slideshow from James Hampton, who's a special agent here, and I'm going to turn it over to him.
Good morning. I'm the resident agent in charge here for the Office of Law Enforcement, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Houston for the southeast Texas area.
What I'm going to start
with,
can you hear me without it?
Yes, we can.
That's much more comfortable. Thank you. Yep.
All right, so let's get started with an overview of the Lacey Act. One thing you may not be aware of is, and Jeff touched on it, it's simply a transportation statute. What it does, the Lacey Act itself, it has to be predicated by violation of law within the state or another federal law. The Lacey Act itself, I can't charge you with a violation of the Lacey Act, not that I do the charging, the Assistant United States Attorneys do the charging, but we can't accuse you of violating the Lacey Act unless you violated a predicate law, a state law, a county law, city law, something like that. You have to break some other law first for us to get involved with the Lacey Act and involve transportation. As you can see up there, it provides several strong provisions for enforcement of wildlife laws. Next, please. A background. We have criminal and forfeiture penalties for certain acts. It's the oldest federal act, wildlife protection statute, and it applies to a wide range, as you're probably aware. These were the general main purposes to, as I mentioned, transportation, to prohibit interstate transport of wildlife killed or possessed in violation of state law. You have to have a predicate law violation for the Lacey Act to get involved. Require accurate markings of shipments. The Lacey Act has different areas. It deals with transportation, but it also deals with marketing. We call false labeling. You have to label your wildlife if you're shipping it interstate. You have to label it accurately. Importation, we deal with that, and injurious species, which is probably why a lot of you are here today to talk about injurious species. Next, please. There you go. The various amendments have strengthened the Act. In 2008, we added the Plants, Trees, and Lumber Amendment. You may have heard of the Gibson case, recently reached resolution. And then lastly is the Injurious Invasive Species Convention, Title 18. And there we go to Title 18, the U.S. Code 42, Injurious Species and Humane Transport. And then Title 16, which deals with the trafficking, the false labeling. That's the one, those are the two that make the police act that we enforce. Injurious. Live. You see the word live, it has to be live. no plant species listed yet, permits available for certain purposes. You can get permitted. It's a very strict and rigorous process to get a permit for an injurious species. Obviously, we don't want the repercussions of it becoming lax and injurious species being brought in and establishing a population. They're found in our regulations, in 50 CFR 16, that deals with the Lacey Act regulations. The list, as you are well aware, is a dynamic process, the list of injurious invasive species. I think possibly you talked about that earlier this morning, about how to get something listed, how to get something delisted. It's a long process. It's not something we do arbitrarily. A lot of science goes into it, a lot of biology. But once it is listed, then it falls under my purview, also law enforcement, and therefore the Lacey Act. Next, please. This is a sample charge that we made, for example, on or about August 1st, District of Arizona, subject did unlawfully transport from Arizona into Nevada an injurious species, specifically African rock pythons, in violation of Title 18. Now, strict liability is the lowest level of prosecutorial requirements to prosecute somebody. Strict liability means you don't have to know, means you didn't have to premeditate. It just simply means you did the act. It's like a stop sign. A stop sign is there all the time. And you run by it, whether you saw it or not, that stop sign is there and exists. That's called strict liability. You ran a stop sign.
Okay. That's where I would have gotten in trouble.
Yes, sir. Strict liability. Exactly. So it mentions the absence of knowing. This is for Title 18. The misdemeanor penalty for it is up to a $10,000 fine, 6 months, and forfeit the wildlife animal. That's for Title 18, Section 42. That's the misdemeanor penalty for it. There's no felony provision for it. Next. Now we're to Title 16, which is the trafficking, the false labeling sections of the Lacey Act. The prohibited acts is unlawful for any person, and these are all. These statutes, you know, if you're in the business, I'm sure you've studied them, or if not, go to the website and read them and study them. Become familiar with them. These affect your livelihoods. So I'm not going to read through them. I'm sure you've all spent time studying this, and you have any questions that we'll get to in the panel session. But as I said, the a trafficking violation has two steps, and the wildlife was taken in violation of state law. Number one, it has to be in violation of state law or federal law if you take it off federal lands. Two, the defendant knew in the course of due care that the wildlife was taken in some illegal manner. And that's new knowledge, knowing, is often hard for us to prove, but it's something that we can prove, believe me. And we work very hard at that to sort out knowing. And then the last, the third one, is knowingly accomplished the import, export, sale, receipt, acquisition, or purchase. The example here is with Gila. How do you say it?
Gila
monsters. So he illegally takes it in Arizona. He knew it's illegal to take those animals in Arizona, and he returns to Texas with it for those sales. You see the triggers, he rings all the bells, he knew, he took it, he transported it. Here we go to the underlying violations of state, foreign, or federal, or tribal law. And then the consummating act, the travel, the sale, the export, the two-step. So whenever you think of Lacey Act, you should think of a two-step procedure. Has to happen. Next, please. Misdemeanor trafficking, any person who knowingly violates, has knowledge, he is transporting knowledge of what the item is, not knowledge that it's illegal, knowledge of what you're transporting. You have to know what you're transporting, right? And any exterior due care should have known that they were taken in violation of the state or federal law. Okay. Here's the penalties for a misdemeanor for wildlife transportation or trafficking. $100,000 fine, up to 1 year in prison, corporations, it doubles, and with the 5 years probation. Felony, now we get to knowingly and different requirements for prosecution. Any person who knowingly transported, okay, so you did that. the person did that. He knowingly engaged in conduct that with a market value of $350. So you have to have knowingly, you have to have a market value in excess of $350, and finally, they have to be sold in violation or they have to violate another law, to bring the Lacey Act. So there's three triggers to get a felony with the Lacey Act. Over $350 in commercial value, knowingly, and you violate another law. Now, I wouldn't want anybody to write an invoice for $349 and transport some illegal fish, snakes, turtles, whatever they may be, and think they're going to evade the felony provision. They won't. We'll go to market value, and so keep that in mind. The penalties for a Class D felony. Now, that's I'll get into an example. $250,000 fine, imprisonment up to 5 years, and these are statutory maximums. Doesn't mean you're going to get 5 years in prison. Doesn't mean you're going to get fined $250,000. It all depends on the impact on resource, the individual who's being charged, all sorts of, there's many, many environment effects, things that affect it, I should say, sorry. You can lose the wildlife and the equipment used in the felony offense. For example, if you use a truck to haul fish from here to there, we can take the truck, or an airplane, or whatever it may be. Some important definitions. It has to be live. Oops, there you go. It includes all wildlife, and down below, the triggering law must be based. That's important. Must be based on wildlife plant protection company. If this, let's say, a turtle is stolen, so and you buy it from somebody, a stolen property, and you transport it in violation of the Lacey Act. And we try to come at you with the Lacey Act and say, well, the law that was broken with that turtle wasn't a conservation law. It was burglary. So the prosecutor the platform hasn't been met to engage the Lacey Act. See? Impact on the resource. That's what affects all our prosecutions. Impact on the resource. False labeling. See the snake hidden in the VCR tape. VCR. Sorry, that's kind of old, huh? maybe I should update that. Pardon? Well, I don't, but... okay. So, false labeling. Again, it's unlawful for any person to make a false record or account or label imported, exported, sold, or transported in interstate ports, in commerce. So A, it was falsely labeled. B, was shipped to New York. It was in a commercial thing over $350. Commercial transaction over $350. That's about it. We recently, this last week, sentenced a gentleman he got 9 months in prison for felony Lacey Act violation. He knew what he was doing illegal. How did we know? Because he had called wildlife inspectors in a certain port and asked if he could do this. He was told by two different inspectors, no, he could not. So he went to another state, shipped the wildlife down to the other state, falsely labeled it, and then tried to make a shipment. He was charged with a felony. He didn't come to a plea agreement prior to his court date. And in court, this is just last week, he was sentenced to 9 months in prison for felony Lacey Act violation. So we do get felony violations, and you can go to prison if you violate that. Providing false information, hugely important. Don't do it. You all are aware of this. Anyway, you have to accurately label your wildlife that you're shipping. Yes, sir.
Just a quick question about that. That doesn't have the... It doesn't have to be, it can be legally required within the state if you ship it falsely labeled, then it's a Lacey Act violation.
Yes, because false labeling is not the interstate, is not predicated by a violation, right? False label, it stands on its own. It doesn't have a, yes.
What happens, what happens if someone were to buy something and somebody shipped the wrong thing? What would happen if...
We could do what-if scenarios on things like that. If there's anything to look at factors on that, maybe you self-report, if you come to your wildlife and say, hey, this came to me, it's not what I wanted, or was it found, and then we look in your history, you've done this 6 or 7 times before, or is there a great impact on the resource, or is it goldfish, and they're called yellow-throated goldfish versus red-throated goldfish. So there's many factors, so I won't be able to address every what-if that I'm sure you have, but let's get through the... It's almost over.
Yeah, let's get through the slides and then we'll do the questions.
Right.
Yep.
Then I'll talk about it. See, he's got to fly behind the table. All right, false labeling. This would be a misdemeanor for false labeling. You can lose the wildlife and a civil penalty of up to $10,000 in fine. Okay. Now, felony false labeling. What do you need? What do you need for felony false labeling? Anybody?
Knowledge.
Take your turn. How much does it have to be over?
Over
$350 in a commercial transaction, and you have to falsely label it. You can be a part of the felony, and you can lose your gear, your truck, whatever it may be, etc. Okay, next.
That's it.
Is it not using?
No, I don't know.
Like 23.
That's it. So I'll go sit up here with my group of panelists and answer questions and address issues and hopefully get some things straightened out if anything's unclear.
We'll go ahead and start with the panelists first, and I actually want to go ahead and start with a question, even though I'm the moderator. When a state regulates an animal and that becomes a Lacey Act issue. Here in the state of Texas, the laws and regulations recognize down to the species level, not the subspecies level. And thus, a wide number of animals that aren't native to Texas fall underneath its codes, like California kingsnakes, strangely enough, only found in California, are considered a native species by the state of Texas under their codes. So if I was to sell this native species according to the state code without my proper permits in the state of Texas to somebody that's out of state, that would in fact be a Lacey Act violation, correct?
Yes, sir. And he touched on a good point there, without his permits. So many of these things can be permitted. So when I say violated a state law, you might be permitted to do that action if you have the permit. So everything that we talk about, there's probably a way to get a permit for it. It may not be an easy permit. It may not be widely distributed. But so when we talk about that, we're violating state law, we're saying without the permit.
Right.
Yes, sir. So what you just described
you could pursue it. But in a case with, say, a California kingsnake that the state of Texas considers native but isn't actually native, is that something that you would look into?
It could be indicative of other traits. If you are involved in something that is a violation of the law as a law enforcement officer, I might think, well, yeah, I'm not too concerned to the impact on the resource. Going back to impact, I have to take my case to the Assistant United States Attorney, and he's dealing with money laundering, drugs, terrorism, and I have to come in there with my kingsnake case. Well, I might want to wait until I find out that he's shipping injurious species, the big constrictors, throughout the Southeast before I go approach an AUSA, or I'll get thrown out of his office on my ear. So everything is influenced by impact on the resource, ability to prosecute. That kingsnake is probably a black and white violation, but will the prosecutor take my case? He might say, no, try a different vector, or come back with when you develop more, or it may say you're going up the wrong tree here. You know, don't even bring this back to me.
What you showed us, was that the way the law was written in 1900?
There's been several. It's going to be a long morning. there have been several amendments to the Lacey Act, but those are just highlights. I mean, that's just a summation of the Lacey Act as we enforce it today.
Because from what we saw this morning's presentation, it almost seemed like it's one of those
can't ride a mule down the middle of downtown Minneapolis on Sundays type of thing. That was all of a sudden resurrected 60 or 80 years later because it was relevant and some really good prosecutor found it. You know what I'm saying? Or something investigative. Or is it something that's always been there and it's just, first it was agricultural and then you guys came into existence, you started to use it more? What's the history of it, I guess, is that question?
I think the history of it comes from the market hunting of ducks and migratory birds for their plumage, for the hats. I don't know, the 40s perhaps? That's the genesis of it. And based on that, we've enforced it throughout the years, and it's the priorities might have changed throughout history. You know, like that trade was shut down in the Bird Treaty Act came into effect, and so we used that more. But the Lacey Act has always been there, and no, I would disagree that it's kind of a, you know, spit on the sidewalk on Sunday type of thing. It's always been enforced, and it's kind of the bread and butter for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to assist the states with enforcement of their game violations. Because a Texas game warden, say he has somebody poach a deer down here, takes it up to Minnesota, he loses all authority to enforce it to Minnesota. So that's when they call us and say, hey, can you help me with this prosecution? This guy's up in Minnesota. We need him interviewed. We need a DNA and blah, blah, blah. So it's a very applicable tool throughout time, throughout history of it, to help the states enforce state violations.
And the last history question, I promise, is, I know maybe it's not your field, but do you think that today Congressman Lacey could have gotten something like this on the books all the way through Washington?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, sir. As I said, it goes back to helping the states. And our state partnership with our conservation officers in the state is a priority for us. Yes, sir.
But I have a question, and it refers back specifically to the states and their responsibilities. When you guys prosecute somebody federally for a Lacey Act violation,
we don't prosecute anyone.
I'm sorry. When the federal prosecutor prosecutes somebody,
yes,
for a Lacey Act violation,
yes, sir,
does the state prosecute for a state violation at the same time, or is that an option for them?
It's always an option.
Okay.
In fact, when we get a Lacey Act violation, we'll go to the state and say, do you want us to handle this federally, or do you want to handle it within your state? And we'll discuss which impact was greater, what's the bigger threat,
mm-hmm.
and the agents will then decide whether to take it to a district attorney, my esteemed colleague on the far right, if you have any questions for him, or if you want to go with the federal AUSA, and then it's pitched to that certain prosecutor.
Would it be prosecuted at both levels at once?
Okay.
It can be.
Oh, it can be.
No.
It can be. We wouldn't.
There is concurrent jurisdiction between the state and the federal. So, in your example of the deer, Texas could very well charge and prosecute them for the state law violation, and the federal AUSA could bring charges for the Lacey Act violation. And the one person could be convicted in both state court and federal court.
Wow.
It's usually not done,
right,
because it's a duplication of effort, and it's usually a matter of who has the greater severity of penalties and who has the broader reach.
Jim, it might be useful to talk a little bit about the other prohibition, which extends sort of the state, assisting states with assisting foreign countries. And the foreign law prohibition?
I think you're referring to if upon import, an item, a leopard, let's say a leopard was poached in South Africa. Well, it was poached or illegally taken. The South African authorities contact the agents over here and say, hey, this leopard is coming in. It was poached illegally, and it's gone. We've lost it. So it's being imported by trophy hunter John Doe in Texas. Well, that's the predicate law now. So there's also the foreign vector of to start the foundation for the Lacey Act violations. So if it's in violation of a foreign law, we can use that as a basis to charge somebody with a Lacey Act violation. Is that where we're...
Yeah, so basically it extends that same trying to assist the states with enforcing their laws. We're also trying to assist foreign countries with enforcing their laws because, of course, once the animals leave those countries, again, they don't have any jurisdiction to take action. And I think there's probably the Lacey Act is used about as much for foreign law violation charges as it is for state law violations. And I think the difference there is there has to be a commerce element, right? It has to be interstate or foreign commerce.
Yes, sir.
And going back to Mark's point, these are not prohibitions that were in the law in 1900. These are prohibitions that were either implemented or amended in the 80s. The Lacey Act was amended several times in the 80s. So it's not something that we sort of pulled up from 100 years ago. It's something that was relatively recent.
And my understanding is it's not necessarily just the animal import. In other words, if I had a bear in Russia and I imported it from Russia, it's not just the bear and the import of the bear that can be an issue. It can also be violations of their wildlife codes in taking that bear. If the bear was legal, if it's completely legal to import a bear from Russia, if I don't know if it is or not, but that's the example I'm going to use. But you took it in a way that violated a foreign country's laws or a state law and transported across those lines, that in itself is a Lacey Act violation. I think here in Houston, we actually had a recent case of a multimillionaire who was hunting from a helicopter in Russia, which is illegal, although the animal he took, I don't think, was illegal to take. His method of take was illegal, and he brought it back into the States, got busted for Lacey Act, got convicted for his Lacey Act violation.
Yes, absolutely you can do that, the method of take, but impact to the resource. If that would go back to impact to the resource. If the animal is legal to be hunted, like a white-tailed deer or a bear in Russia, and it's legal, the population is fine, it's legal to take, but then again, you have to sell that to a prosecutor or at least present it to a prosecutor, and he may say, not now. And I'm not sure that gentleman was convicted.
I think he was. He was either convicted or he struck a plea.
But,
one of the
that's, well, that's before my time, but I've heard of that case. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Going back, I guess, to Jeff's original point about statute of limitations within the reptile industry, you can walk around the expo that's going to be here on Sunday, and there are animals that I see at expos that 4 or 5 generations back came into this country in someone's luggage. And, you know, there are countries, for example, that have very restrictive animal export rules. What's the Lacey Act implication for someone who buys some animal out of Australia that, you know, was smuggled out of Australia illegally 10 generations ago? Is it still alive?
Yes, it does. It didn't, recently we had a attempt. Yes.
There's a similar situation we're coming up with on these special hybrid cats like Savannah cats and Bengal cats. There was a cat that was imported several years ago. It was before my time with the service, even. We're talking 8-9 years ago. It was used in quite a few breeding centers, I guess you could say, canneries. Basically, because it was imported illegally, every offspring that came from that cat is considered illegal. What does that mean for you owning it? If you're 6, 7, 8 generations down the line and you didn't have any knowledge of it, are we going to come after you for it? Probably not. If you try and ship that cat internationally in a commercial setting, we're not going to allow it to go out. You won't be able to get a permit for it. Basically, again, if you're looking at, am I going to sell this reptile in the same state that I live in to somebody in this state? There's no interstate travel, there's no international travel. The person buying it, if he doesn't know it's illegal, are we going to go after that person buying one snake? No. Again, it depends on if it's commercial, the quantity, the knowledge.
So if I, as a consumer, I go into the expo and I pick up, I don't know, some rosy boa from Mexico, then my question is, you know, her origin. I know that this guy bred it and came from parents, 5 generations ago. But I have a question about its origin. Am I in violation of the Lacey Act? Do I have to know that it's legal in order to defend myself?
Well, if you have a question about its origin, you really shouldn't purchase it in the first place. That's just plain to say. I mean, honestly. It's like going down and buying a scared off by a guy on the side of the road. Do you know it's illegal? No. But do you have reasonable suspicion that there might be something shady about it?
Yeah.
If
I have Craigslist from another guy on Craigslist, from another guy down the road.
Right.
I mean, you have to put high-tech in something. It's like
animal laundry, but then it's well, it's not a wildlife violation, so it's not. That's just looking at it as, is it illegal, is it not illegal, is it shady, should I buy this, you know.
I think it might be useful also to point out who bears the burden in a situation like that. The burden's on the government to show that the parental stock, one generation, two generations, five generations back, was unlawfully imported, unlawfully taken, etc. That burden shifts when you apply for a permit to take it somewhere because you have to then demonstrate lawful acquisition. But in that situation, and in all the situations Jim described, we the government bears the burden of demonstrating that there was a violation there.
This was kind of a chase. I want a vegetable. Tens of thousands of bearded dragons mm-hmm. are produced mm-hmm. in this country every year. I purchase hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bearded dragons every year that I sell at my store. Is that a violation of this guy?
Do you know that they're illegal? Is there a history that tells you that these are illegal?
Originally, they were smuggled in the United States.
Is there captive breeding? Yeah.
Australia, of course, is the best example of this because you have all these Australian endemics that are available in the United States. And I'm not entirely sure the bearded dragon example is the best one because there were animals that came out of zoos that were bred in zoos. There were animals that, I don't think if we went back to the Australian government and said, have you ever allowed the export of bearded dragons legally? I don't think their answer would be no. We have never done it once in the last 100 years. I don't think that's a great example. I think if we're talking about some of the rarer monitors or something that has only shown up more recently in the marketplace, there might be a clearer case there where the Australians would be willing to say, no, we've never allowed those animals out for commercial purposes. We've only allowed them to zoos, and when we sent them to zoos, we explicitly said on the permits that we issued to them that they could not be used for commercial purposes. So I don't think the bearded dragon example is a good example of where there's a Lacey Act violation, but there might be some other right. So it gets muddier the more unusual they are.
My problem is I sell thousands of reptiles a year, and I ship them all over the country. Mm-hmm. I'm buying them in what I feel is a legal fashion. Am I violating the weight? When I ship them, I label the boxes properly. Everything's above board. Is the animal in that box illegal or not? I just want an answer. And no one can ever give me.
So if the service thinks that it has a case to question the origin of the founder stock, that's where you get interested. And if it's something that's so hard to get a handle on, there's bigger fish to fry and more important things.
Yeah, I think what you're going to find is things like the bearded dragons and the carpet pythons is the muddy. The water is so muddy now about origination on those species that it would be difficult for them to convince a prosecutor to go forward with the case. If it was a set of New Zealand geckos, however, you're going to ring every bell between here and the courthouse.
Right.
Because those have entered the market in such limited numbers in the last 100 years that virtually all genetics are traceable back to the guy in Germany that smuggled it.
A question I had for Jim in the presentation, pretty much everywhere that it said mislabeling, we look at that, I mean, we know that it's smuggling. In essence.
It, right.
But if I ship 10 turtles to another state legally and I forget to put the Latin, the scientific name on their 10 Trichomyscriptalogons, that's not really smuggling. That's just, that is legitimate mislabeling. Is there a difference in how you look at that prosecutorially?
Yes. And that would come out through the investigation, through interviews, through your history, through many different factors. But you're right, smuggling and false labeling and are almost synonymous when they're coming in from international port. Interstate, you know, you did put turtles on there, you even put the name of the turtle.
We put live turtles in every box, but if we don't have the scientific name, I don't know that we're compliant.
Probably not. Quantity. Yeah, probably not. You need to put the scientific name, but... again, it goes back to what Jeff's point about prosecutability, and I hope, sir, that you heard what you were talking when he was giving you an answer, and I appreciate what he said, because it is all up to prosecutability. So there's your answer.
Well, I was just going to add to that on the labeling issue. The labeling requirements are also spelled out in the regulations. And I think they present several different options for how you can meet the labeling requirement. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to list common scientific name on every box. I think there's one option that says fish or wildlife, and then you can refer to documents accompanying the shipment which list it. But anyway, there are a number of different ways to meet the labeling requirement.
I guess, and it may be a specific example that matters to industry too, but I know it does to my company is, if I send one radiator slider and I put one Trachomy script to Elegans, it also says live turtles on the box, I think I'm fully compliant. Now, if I ship $10,000 in a box about this big, and any UPS driver can Google search what is this Latin name mean? Oh, it means this. Then he goes on Kingsnake and he can see that they all sell for $1,000 a piece. Now it's worth it to him to use his one free swing and say, hey, this one must have fallen off the truck. And so I'm going to take it and I'm going to get a print that's about that big and maybe tape it to the bottom of the box or bury it in the UPS label where it looks like the rest of the print or something, because I really don't want to put giant dollar signs steal me all over the box either. So I'm kind of trying to serve two masters there, not getting robbed and what you guys want me to do. So where do you really stand? What can I do and what can everybody else who ships do to comply and still not invite theft?
And that's why I think the labeling options in the regulations afford for avoiding that kind of a situation. I mean, I'd have to pull up the different options, but I do think one of them simply says fish or wildlife, maybe Fred, you can answer this, fish or wildlife on the box, and then you can refer to the invoice for the more specific information.
If you can actually say that on the outside of the box, refer to invoice?
Well, when you're dealing with international imports and exports like I deal with, I don't do a lot of interstate stuff because we're import and export oriented. When you bring something in from overseas or send it out, the declaration form is really what right. We're looking at to be 100% perfect. Mm-hmm. We'll accept on the boxes turtles, live animals. What we're looking at and what the regs say is that we have to have that 3177 with the exact scientific name. The numbers have to match up. Mm-hmm. And we understand that stuff going out to a foreign country, especially some of these third world type countries, there's a lot of theft and you don't want to have your stuff stolen and lose money. But as far as we're concerned, what you're declaring on that 3177, which we'll get into later in the panel this afternoon, is what has to be inside that box.
Well, I'm talking more about domestic shipments. I remember years ago FedEx flew us in the 80s to their headquarters in Memphis to show us a bunch of things, and one of them was a video of a guy in their plant, and they were trying to figure out how some retailer couldn't ship Rolexes. They kept getting stolen, and the boxes were coming by like this. And just the one guy, and they had put cameras all along their whole route. And the one guy, the box would come by, and the guy would just check it, do what he had to do. And then when you zoomed in really close, even with the technology back in the 80s, he pulled the razor blade from under his watch, slid the box open, took the Rolex out, took it off the thing, put it on his wrist, closed the box, and retaped it in about 4 seconds. And you're like, holy shit. So I'm looking at that saying, well, if I'm going to put the scientific name of star tortoises on the box and it says 20 of them, and the UPS driver can go on his phone and find out what they're worth, I want to do this in a way, if you tell me I could say, refer to invoice inside for contents, beautiful. I love that. But I don't know if that, I get with Craig on that, or how do we find out what I am allowed to do? Because putting the scientific name on the outside and the quantity can be pretty precarious for anybody with a cell phone. With the UPS drivers or FedEx or whomever.
You don't have a lot of faith in the shipping industry.
I know. They get all my money, too. I think I work for them.
Next question. Anybody have a question next? Up here? Okay, audience questions?
I go back to Craig's point a minute ago. I guess I'm still parking on the same thing. So, if the Australian government comes out and says, we have never legally exported this species of monitor, and they provide the information to Fish and Wildlife, does that mean then every single individual debt monitored in the United States in people's homes and stuff, therefore becomes a Lacey Act violation. Obviously, you're not going to go knock on some 10-year-old kid's door, but the next time that kid decides to send that to a friend of his in Idaho, then that could theoretically happen. Every individual kid is a violation.
Okay, I'm going to try to answer part of this, and I may refer to Jim for the other part of it. This issue comes up for us in the context of processing permit applications. When someone comes to us and says, I want to export my Parente monitor to the UK, you know, a little alarm bell goes off in our head, and we contact Australia, and we ask, how many Parente monitors have you allowed exported over the last 50 years? Zero. Then we're going to deny that permit application because we can't make the finding we have to make that it was a lawfully acquired specimen. From our standpoint, that's all that's going to happen, is you're not going to get your permit for your Parente monitor. I think we've talked about enforcement discretion and, you know, what's a priority for us, and, you know, if there are 10,000 of these things held by 10,000 different individuals in the country, are we going to go knocking on each of their doors? Number one, how would we know which doors to knock on in the first place? And number two, I think the answer, I'll let Jim speak to it, the answer is probably not.
Right.
But when we're obligated to make a particular finding and take an action, we're going to ask those questions, and we're going to, you know, react based on the information we get.
From a financial point of view, let's say you're breeding parentheses, and just to use that example, and I went out and bought 10 breeding pairs of parentheses and laid out $25,000 or $30,000 for them. I had this huge financial investment. Suddenly, Fish and Wildlife could come down and say, oh, by the way, you're never going to be able to ship those to anybody, sell them to anybody, or at least over state lines. Now, I can see that as a, you shouldn't have bought them in the first place, and I agree, but I can see that being a problem for some of these species.
Well, across state lines, you don't require these labeling requirements for interstate commerce, do you? Mm-hmm. Just for international commerce, correct?
I don't know. The Lacey Act pertains to both the interstate and international transport.
But
so,
you don't need any permits to ship interstate, so...
Well, it depends on the species. If you have an endangered or threatened species under the ESA, that's also prohibited interstate transport. If you have something at CITES, that's an international framework, so you'd only be required to have a CITES permit going internationally.
Let's say it's a bearded dragon, which isn't CITES, which isn't, but is in that gray area of somebody may have smuggled the progeny in at some point. I don't recall ever having to fill out any forms. Before Texas required permits for selling native species, I don't recall ever having to fill out any forms or
no,
label the box in any other way other than saying live reptiles when I shipped it to somebody in California. Is that the case? For a non-protected
species?
Yeah.
I can't think of off the top of my head any laws that would require you to exactly put what's on what we're talking about really when we're talking about labeling violations is you're calling a shipment of turtles a shipment of handbags.
Right.
You know, something that's blatantly not what is in the box.
Right.
Or if you're calling an endangered species a non-endangered species. You know, something where you're trying to get away with shipping something that's obviously not what's in the box.
Right.
For instance, we had a shipment, and it's not a live reptile, but we had a shipment of python skin handbags coming from overseas labeled as cow leather. Well, that's obviously a Lacey Act violation. Well, it's not live, it's not Lacey Act, but it's a marking violation. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for y'all shipping out, you know, an endangered species and calling it a Ritter slider. You know, that's basically what we're looking at.
Smuggling.
Yeah, basically. It's the same intent. Intent to deceive by calling it something it's not.
Back to this gentleman, when you were talking about if you had the pair. Well, let's say you called Craig's shop and they said, no, we're not giving you the permit. You know, I'm not getting involved. And then you do ship them out and it comes to an agent's attention. Then, yes, we probably would come after you prosecutorially because of the steps that happened. But would I be interested in that or even try to sell that to a prosecutor? No, unless those egregious steps happened, and then it, you're kind of forcing it on me, you know, at that point. So I'd be like, okay, let's look at it.
Could the Fish and Wildlife Service make some sort of declaration that every parent in the United States is officially, you know, offspring of a legally imported individual? And I don't know how, there's not like a board of notice on, but I just think, again, I don't have a problem, I don't keep this sort of stuff, but I'm sure there are people who have stuff in their, you know, in their animal rooms, and if it was shown that all of that stock was illegal, the financial thing would take by itself.
Well, but there is that full-looking board, and it's the Endangered or Threatened Species List. Anything that's going to be in that type of ballpark is then potentially subject to the listing PFA.
Right, but that wouldn't apply for non-threatened species, which are
correct.
Smuggled in.
Correct.
And that's really, and this exists, this problem is real, it's not hypothetical. I don't know individuals, and I'm not an argument. Wow. I walk by the expos, and I see these things come, and I think, where did this come from? How did this get into the country? And people go, I don't know, some guy read it. There's the Germany excuse. Yeah, a lot of these things come from Germany.
The Germans have the loosest pants in all of airports.
Apparently, or at least that's our experience.
Well, also, you know, as an importer, If you can pull that off, or you can get a legitimate permit, you don't want to broadcast that to the world, because that's basically business private knowledge, and that's money to you, and you took a lot of resources to get that. So if there are Fly River turtles, for instance, some have been brought in, I believe. I don't know. I don't touch them because I don't know. But I believe that some have been brought in, and if they were legal, then and somebody has them and he's legitimately selling them, or some company is, and they believe that they can get a lot of money for them, and they don't care what their customers think about it, as long as they're happy to get an invoice type of mentality. You did it right, you did it legally, so these came in legally. Now everything in the United States is kind of commingled, what was legal, what was illegal, but this guy got some in, or those people got some in for a couple of years or whatever it was, and that's happened many times with different species that are now heavily protected, even like Kleinman's tortoises. And that's fruit of a lot of effort sometimes too, and you're not going to get people divulging that. Now, if everybody knows that this person brought it in this year, they may all refer to that, which could all be lies or it could all be true. You don't know how reproductive they are. But really, whenever somebody does get a legal shipment of something in, they're not going to broadcast it. They know that anybody can go to the Freedom of Information Act and find out who the source was. Hey, I can contact the source. I can go through government channels. I can do whatever it takes to get that too. Because of that, it makes it tougher really to pin down whether you think something. You may think that all Fly River turtles are illegal. Maybe some are legal. Maybe they're all legal. I don't know either. I don't know. Like you said, I don't know, so I don't touch them. I get requests from them all the time. I just don't touch them.
But 5 generations down the line, then,
you know, it's definitely hard, because you may go to Craig and he may say, yeah, you know, some did come in legally. But we don't want to broadcast it to everybody else either, because that'll encourage more people to smuggle some more in. There's going to be a lot of reasons for it, too. So it gets really hard. That's probably why we're all here today. Because what do you do in a situation like that? If you legitimately want to breed something, work with something, or even invest in it, like you said.
Is there any breakdown as to how many Lacey Act violations are prosecuted that are international versus interstate?
No, sir.
They're just Lacey Act violations as far as your records are concerned.
Yes. There's a question, gentleman in the hat.
I just have a question. You brought up the 41. I breed basically carpet pythons and children's stuff from Australia. If you had legally paperwork for it, legally came out here, and you bred it for generations, and I decide later on I want to ship some to, say, South Africa, even though it's an Australian species that at one time was illegal, and I might 1/64th of however many generations back, pulling the parental stock off of what I had in the States was illegal. How does that go back?
Go ahead.
Sure. So there are a couple of things to address there. One is, again, going back to that point, that except for that application to export something, let's say we'll get to that, but the burden still is on us to demonstrate that the particular animal you possess is illegal in some way. So that burdens on us, and that gets more difficult when there are more animals available from more potential sources. The other is that, and this is a point worth making, is that just because something was cleared when it was imported does not guarantee its legality. And there was an example recently where we had an application for an export of an Australian endemic, and it was born of parental stock that were lawfully they were imported from Europe and cleared. Germany, I think it was Germany, actually. Was it Germany? We'll blame the Germans. Issued a permit for it. And we went to the Australians and said, have you allowed any out? And, the only ones who've allowed out were to zoos, and the permits were conditioned that they couldn't enter commerce. We went back to the Germans. Maybe it wasn't the Germans. And we pointed this out to them, and their response was basically, oops. We should have never issued that permit in the first place. So that's a scenario where, again, we denied the export of these progeny because we could demonstrate that they were not lawfully imported into the United States. I don't believe anything else happened in that particular instance other than we didn't issue the permit. So again, that burden is going to be on us until you come to us and ask us to do something for you, and then the burden shifts to you to demonstrate legality.
And this may be the albino olive case, which may be perfect.
Yeah, it was.
But as far as like carpet pythons, and it's not like rough scales or something really off the wall. Carpets have been here for 40, 50 years. Some have probably been illegal, some are working. So with me being able to shift as a normal coastal carpet, just decide I want to, start doing international shifts. How's that?
Right,
I guess that's my question.
Okay.
Because it's something more common, and the water is a little
muddy
on that. So.
And again, can I answer that? In terms of permits, in order for you to export or re-export, and a permit is required from our office, you have to meet two criteria if the species is listed on their site. It's not only the legal acquisition finding that we are looking for, but also the non-detriment finding that one of our Division of Scientific Authority will make that finding for us. So just sometimes you can meet one criteria, but if the other one is not, then we have to base our decision on the information provided by the applicant.
What I'm gathering from this is that the bar for prosecution of a Lacey Act violation is substantially higher than the bar for you declining a permit to export animals that are suspect. In other words, you've got to go through a whole bunch of loops and leaps to get a prosecution on a Lacey Act violation. But and in terms of permitting for somebody for export, you don't have as much of a legal hurdle to prevent an animal from being exported.
Right. We have to meet the legal burden. I think the permits are administrative.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Greg, along the lines of what Jeff was just talking, you mentioned in the circumstance you were just referring to that, as far as we know, it is simply the denial of the permit. Would you care to comment on the likelihood of prosecution under Lacey Act in that kind of situation?
Where we were able to actually demonstrate that the issuing country made an error in issuing the permit?
Exactly.
It gets back to what Jim talked about knowledge. Can we demonstrate that the importer knew that country should have issued that permit? Seems pretty unlikely to me. Yeah, and I think that's one that we sort of throw our hands up and say, things happen.
Yeah, if a permit... I'm sorry, if a permit was issued by mistake by a foreign government, right. Yeah, we wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
It's called government estoppel.
Yeah.
I just want to share my experience with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. I import a lot of animals as I supply Petco and PetSmart also. In every case, Am I not loud enough?
Sorry.
In every case, they've been very, very fair. I've probably three times I have violated Lacey's Act. And every time they were very fair. First time, maybe 10 years ago, I had some tarantulas come in, and there were species mixed in. And they knew it wasn't my fault, but at the same time, I broke the law. So I just paid, I think it was counting like $500. Another case where I had some mastics come in, instead of 100 where it was listed, it was 101. Again, you know, as an importer, I really have no control of that. But at the same time, as an importer, I'm responsible by the law. But at the same time, they knew it wasn't really my fault, and they did not penalize me at all for that. And another case where I got Russian tortoises in, and Chinese permit was not right. They forgot to sign it. And this is the exporter that has exported to me for 3-4 years. And one time when he was on vacation, his helper forgot to get the paper right. I broke the law. But at the time, they knew that, you know, it wasn't intentional. So every time that I've dealt with Fish and Wildlife, they've always been fair. I think every case is very different. And that's, I think, what they're trying to point out here. You know, every, you know, there has to be intent. And if you know that what you're doing has anything to do with breaking the law, you shouldn't do it. That's the bottom line, I think.
Thank you.
And for the record, we gave him no money.
I kept waiting for but.
We'll be coming to you.
I did want to relate a KingState.com story that some of the people may be familiar with. And it does go back specifically to intent. A few years ago, there was an individual that was on KingState.com that lives in Colorado. And he hatched out Western hognose snakes. Now, it was perfectly legal for him to have Western hognoses in Colorado. They're native to the state. But it's illegal for him to sell Western hognoses because they don't allow that. They don't allow the commerce of their native species. The problem was he hatched out an albino Western hognose, the very first Western hognose that I'm aware of that hatched out as albino. And he proceeded, he knowingly violated the Lacey Act, proceeded to sell them on kingsnake.com. The majority of the buyers also knew that they were violating the Lacey Act. And it was that intent that got all of them wrapped up. And I can't remember the number of people, but it was a good number. It was 6 or 8 people ended up walking around with fines and nice little leg irons that beeped if they went to the wrong place. But it, a lot of this, a lot of the prosecution, when you're talking about a criminal prosecution, has to do with intent. Was it your intent to break the law? If it was your intent to break the law, darn right, they're going to take you as far as they can. If it was me as a 9-year-old accidentally taking some horn toads from Texas to Indiana because I didn't know any better, they're probably not going to prosecute me on that. At least I hope so. Well, I'm thinking I have enough friends up here that, you know, maybe.
You're over 14 now, right?
I am over 14.
Yes, ma'am.
And I do Reptile Rescue in the Cape City of Houston, and I have no idea what I'll get in and when. So, once I get an animal in and healthy again, then I try to adopt them out. So, I don't ship anything, so that's not an issue. But what happens if I adopted some, like I'll have some animals out of the expo. What happens if I adopted out an animal that I have no idea where it came from, and I maybe don't know that it's one of these animals that came from whatever bloodline, and somebody else buys it or adopts it, and then takes it out of state. Is that a problem? To me.
Technically, yes,
right now.
But it goes back to what this gentleman said. Pardon me. Let's change your scenario a little bit and say it's somebody brings you one of the 5 or 4 constrictors that are now listed as injurious. Somebody brings you one of them, and I come to you. I've heard you've been doing this for a long time, and now you've attracted the attention of an agent. So I come to you as in undercover capacity and say, hey, I'm just in town for a couple days. I live over in Georgia. Can I adopt that snake? I've just given you knowledge that this snake is being transported out of state. So yes, then there's a Lacey Act injurious problem. Yes, there is, because I've given you knowledge. Especially when you adopt something, do you charge an adoption fee? You might call it an adoption fee, but it's commercial trade. So you just have to be careful. If you know that this snake is going out of state and it is a prohibited species to leave the state, one of these invasive ones, then you could get in trouble. Now, the way you said it, in your original scenario, no, you know, yes, technically, but no, you know.
Here's another interesting scenario that just cropped up on kingsnake.com. We have a rescue person up in, I think it's South Dakota, and somebody gave her a Texas horny toad as a rescue man. And obviously, it was illegally obtained because Texas hasn't allowed horned toads out forever. And nobody's producing Texas horned toads. She didn't acquire the animal legally. She didn't bring it across state lines. She didn't encourage anybody to ship it across state lines. It just showed up at a rescue. Somebody brought it to her as a rescue. What is her liability? Does she have any liability?
None, unless she transports it out of state.
Okay.
Or unless she tries. But I would ask, are those things captive bred?
No.
No. Doesn't work. Okay. Well, then no, until she tries to get it out of state or attempts to facilitate its movement out of state.
Now, here's an interesting addition to that. What if she has this Texas horned toad up in South Dakota and she wants to ship it to the Texas Horned Lizard Conservation Organization here in Texas?
She could probably get a permit. Is that a scientific group, this Texas thing, or is
it's
it
a conservation group? I don't know. I don't know that they would qualify, and I don't know who would be the issuing agency for the permit. Would it be Texas that would have to issue the permit?
Texas Parks
and Rec.
You talk to them; they'll tell you what to do.
Okay.
I should get your card before we get out of here, because I always look for, you know, we recently acquired several constrictors, and you know. Great.
You got a question out there?
I have a question off of Gita. If it's legal in Texas to own a vermin site, she gets one. She adopted to somebody in Georgia, and if it's legal to own them in Georgia, I'm not sure if it is.
It would have to be prohibited in Georgia.
But if it's
illegal,
it's
a
pipe. Oh, right. Sorry. Under Title 18, the injurious, there is no required predicate law. You've just entered it into interstate transport, and so therefore, yes. Sorry.
So great. I'm sorry. I'm very close from Germany, so I'm very.
I'm glad you're here, sir.
He's from France.
No, I'm not French, but we are not very far from Germany. Just for me to understand the things clearly, if by any chance I get new bloodlines of bearded dragons, I'm not sure about how close they are related to Australia, but they are new bloodlines and I want to ship them to the US. Is that breaking the Lacey Act? That I cannot prove, like a ranking, you know, the dog by the dragons. They came in, by any way, to Germany 20 years ago. Is that, I understand I'm not going to go prosecuted for that, but is that breaking the Lacey Act, shipping them out of Europe to the US?
Help me with the new bloodlines. Tell me,
no,
what
no,
is that?
No, I mean that. We can talk about some Australian geckos, which are very common now in Europe, but they've been bringing illegal ways 10 or 20 years ago. I mean, there is no way to prove that these animals came in legally. I understand that it's not a major issue, but is that against the Lacey Act?
if you have your permit to if you apply for the import permit and are granted the import permit, then
these are non-protected species.
Right. Yeah. So in this case, there's no permit requirement. So there's no export permit out of France. There's no import permit. There's just the declaration.
Right.
That Brad described. I guess what I would say is if there's still a tag on the leg says made in Australia, you're going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it comes back to can we demonstrate, can we go into a court of law and prove these animals came out of Australia illegally, then yes, because you violated a foreign law and then sent them to the United States. But that's our burden, not yours.
Going back to the question about the reptile shows, if I'm in a state, if I'm a resident of a state and I have a species that's endangered and can't cross state lines, somebody comes up to buy it. To be prudent, I want to see a license. If they say, oh, I don't have a license, my sister over here, forget it. But if they have a license, have I done my due diligence? If they say, I'm a resident of the state, or if they go to me, hey, I have a house here, my license is in Florida, but I live in New York. No. But if they have, if I'm a vendor at a reptile expo and I want to sell something that's supposed to stay in state, if I've checked their license and I don't have any suspicion, because I would think that somebody undercover might come and go, well, you know, I got a license, but I really live in so, or no, I don't, but my cousin over here, you know,
right.
Something like that is a tip off. But if somebody legitimately has that, have I done?
Yes.
Give them an invoice, copy the license number
yes.
down at that point. But
yes.
Anytime you get a tip off. And the other question that comes up too is a gift. And the question I get asked all the time, well, I heard you can give a gift. And I say, well, listen, it's true you can give a gift, as far as I know. But as soon as you repay one penny of that gift, you're going to federal prison. I mean, is that the way to handle that?
Right.
Because
I like both those. And the asking for the license is your due diligence. As long as he's, not saying, yeah, I'm moving to New Hampshire next week, that type of thing. So you as the seller, that it's incumbent upon you to say, hey, are you a local resident? Are you a state resident? Jot it down. Put that as a caveat on the bill of sale. His driver's license is from Texas, and I verified it. But yeah, that would protect you from, yes, sir.
Yeah, and the gift question, again, relates to which particular prohibition you're talking about, because one prohibition, the foreign law prohibition, requires a commerce element.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a transfer without commerce, then maybe that element's not invoked. But the state law one doesn't require a commerce element, right? Isn't that correct?
Correct.
So it has to be a legitimate gift, is what it comes down to.
Here's another interesting
hard for us to prove
question. Let's say I'm in Texas and I own legal spotted turtles. I love spotted turtles.
They're legal here.
So many people in trouble. Let's say I'm in Texas and I own some legal spotted turtles, and somebody in Virginia contacts me and wants to buy some spotted turtles where spotted turtles are protected. Is that a Lacey Act violation? Go the other way. Sending protected animals back to their home state in trouble.
Sending unprotected animals to a state where they're protected.
Sending unprotected, exactly.
This is where the predicate law doesn't happen until after
right.
the movement.
I've not heard of that.
See, what I do is I have orders from range states, and I say to them, you need to get me permission, you need to get a permit. Oh, well, we don't need it. Oh, great. Who do I talk to in your state Department of Natural Resources that can verify that? Because if I can't verify it, it's not going to a range state. And if you try to go on my website and order something from a range state, it won't let you.
Yeah.
Wow. Good.
That, your example... I would say that if the state was going to protect it, allow that, like we do, so if I wanted to use those things, which is right here, I could buy one from something for it on this 23 grand on it, get a bill of sale, and then documenting that animal came from them, bring that back here, I can possess it, I can have it, I can do whatever I want with it except for bring it and sell it.
Interesting.
Right. Then I'm legal to own it here, and I would send it to the operator because that's why I'm
Well, right. If you're not violating any state law, any
right.
federal
right.
law, any
exactly.
foreign law,
it's
impossible
then you're
to violate
good.
The Lacey Act.
Right.
That part of the Lacey
you
Act, 16, cut of 16.
You can possess it. Yeah, good.
You've got your indigo state, and somebody said you're from California. You're in Texas, you've got your permit to the export as well.
You documented it.
You documented it. Okay. Now you want to move to Oklahoma.
Okay.
Is it that Lacey Act?
Is it, we don't have no law?
There's
What? Oh, in Oklahoma, you can't possess the snake?
No, no, you can possess. You can possess it in Oklahoma.
Is it injurious?
No, no. It's. Let's take indigo out of the picture. Let's just say it's a snake.
Right.
All right. It's a snake that's protected in the state of Texas, but you've been able to document it to the point that
this. Well, you acquired it legally.
Right.
Does Texas.
You wanted to move to Alaska with it.
Is it a violation of Texas law to take it out of the state? Is it a violation of Oklahoma law to bring it into Oklahoma?
That answers that question.
No.
I had gotten into some protected California turtles, tortoises, and the people had told me the story about how, no, they were Arizona, sorry. And they had them, and they had the babies, and they gave them to these people who left. And I contacted the proper authorities in Arizona. We had a talk and discovered that, yes, they had been removed illegally because the law predated the age of the tortoises, and they just wanted me to ship them back to them.
Anybody else have a question? Yes,
sir. Was there ever any discussion when CITES came out to roll the Endangered Species Act into CITES? So there wasn't really two parallel laws. Kind of actually damaging commerce. I know people that breed Cabotona, for instance, in Florida, breed thousands of them. That's an endangered species. The guy has so many now, and yet he's forced to sell them only in Florida. And I don't know what the process is to delist those turtles off the endangered species list, because, yeah, maybe they're rare in India, but they're rare in India because they're eating them all. You know, now they're common in the U.S. So I guess I have two questions here. How do you get something off the endangered species list? And was there ever any discussion on rolling endangered species into science? Or it should be in the first place?
So I'm happy to report that there's an Endangered Species Act panel that can take up part of that question later. And okay, go ahead, Susan.
It's no hard to endure as well as listing. You go through the regulatory process.
Thank you.
Similar to injurious wildlife, like I was saying, they both go under Administrative Procedure Act. You can evaluate something for listing or evaluate it for delisting. You go through the proposed rule and the public comment and the final rule, et cetera. You have to do all of those requirements again. So it's just a reverse of listing.
Good point.
Wolves.
In the news.
Only that.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a list. It's posted on our website. Yeah. There haven't been a lot, because it's much more difficult to recover a species than it is to cause it to become rare or endangered. It's easy to kill them off. It's hard to reproduce them and establish them again. So there are many fewer recoveries.
Alligators would also be a good example.
That's an excellent example.
But before we get too excited about delisting Hamiltona, I think you hit on the important point, and that is that in their native range, they're still in lousy shape.
I agree.
And with a single exception, I can't think of a single species that is covered by the Endangered Species Act in its native range, but not covered outside of its native range. I mean, we don't split it up that way. So the fact that they're prevalent in you know, domestically outside of their native range is not necessarily a good reason to delist them. And the Asian arowana, a fish that is produced by the tens or hundreds of thousands on fish farms, but is on the verge of extinction in the wild, is a good example of one that I don't think would qualify for delisting.
But Craig, then you have the breeder who says, well, let's just say the Hamiltoni go extinct in their native range, their natural range,
yeah.
And yet there's 100 breeders in the U.S. who'd be happy to create founder stock and resurrect this animal from extinction. That, I think, is a good example. The problem is that, unlike a lot of people who come to you with petitions and have a lot of legal staff and a lot of money, private individuals aren't going to have those resources, time, energy, or money to get all that needs to be done to get it delisted, because it seems like a daunting task for an individual to make.
And I think that's going to crop up and become more of an issue as Kittredge takes more and more hold, because I think one of the only ways we're going to be able to save a lot of these amphibian species is to bring them into the captive breeding commercial environment, because
commercial breeders, quite frankly, outproduce the zoos by about 1,000 to 1. And maybe we need to start looking at a way to put those back, put the facilities and the laws and the regulations in place so that we can put those animals back in the wild when we're ready.
Well, here in the great state of Texas, we have 3 antelope species that are federally protected, federally listed. They are African species in all 3 cases, all 3, right?
Yes.
They are held in private hands by in the hundreds or thousands. They are allowed to be hunted under a permitting regime. I mean, there is some incentives within the Endangered Species Act for certain activities that allow for propagation of the species and creating incentives to do that. So there are some examples out there of ways that you can go about that.
Regarding the python law, USGS, of course, put that report out stating that they can become established in basically the southern belt. U.S. Fish and Wildlife is a federal body, right, covering all states. Why not just stop the importation of those 4 snakes and recommend to those states where they can become established to basically outlaw those snakes instead of really harming the commerce in the entire U.S. where they can never become established? I mean, I don't understand why that went to a... Why that went into the Lacey Act? That seems like a harsh... Because Lacey Act, you are guilty of proven innocent. It's the only statute that's like that in the United States. It's a terrible statute, as far as... I mean, you're basically criminalizing people on the same level as a rapist. You know, it just doesn't seem right.
You want to take the first half of that?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you part of the two guys. So the first part was why not make it up to the state?
No, why not stop the importation? U.S. Fish stops the importation.
Right.
And recommend to those states where they can, that are in the USGS survey, that they just prohibit those states, those 4 pipelines.
Okay, well, the Fish and Wildlife Service does work with the states all the time, but it's not like we can recommend to states what to do. We can provide information to them, and in fact, the states look to us to get scientific information. In fact, they're looking to us for these risk screenings that we're doing with the pet industry now. It's not easy to get this type of information and have the expertise that you need to do the modeling, to do the risk assessments, and not every state has that available. And so they often look to a federal agency to get that information. That's not unusual. In this case, they go to the Fish and Wildlife Service for some of their information. I've seen states like Missouri, for example, will take whatever we list as injurious and make it their injurious law, but they have more restrictions because that includes possession. It wouldn't do them to, you know, they can't restrict importation or interstate transport. But it does, you know, maybe include sale or whatever. So they look to us to give them the expertise. And as far as, you know, why not just some of the states, I think we've been through this before. Some states do take initiative, like Florida. Some states may not. They may not have the funding. They may not have the resources. There may be any one of a number of reasons why a state can't do it. So the way we have handled it, first of all, it started as a petition. We got petitioned by an agency of the state of Florida, the South Florida Water Management District, petitioned us to list the Burmese python as injurious. So right away, it came from an agency of the state of Florida to list it nationally.
But nationally, Susan, why can't Alaska have them? I mean, you know, why does your rule have to be for all 50 states? Why can't it be selected?
Because they're a federal agency.
I'm just saying.
Because a federal agency can only make laws at a federal level.
Yep.
They can't make laws at a state level, and they can't demand that a state implement a law on their own because of the thing called states' rights.
All right. Did you want to talk about the...
Oh, guilty before proven something. Yeah, rapist.
No,
wow. Guilty. Tell me in what court they're guilty. What the Lacey Act? You're guilty until proven.
You're basically, you have to prove your innocence. In other words, I used to be in the live import export business back in my younger days, And thank God I don't have that stress anymore. Because if it was a stressful business, I'll tell you. If I had somebody in Thailand send me a birthday cake, throw a monitor in there that had the merit pattern, I'm in violation of the LACI Act. I have to prove to the government that I didn't cause that guy to throw that monitor in there as the birthday present to me. You know, I mean, there are exceptions, and it's just a very harsh, daunting law. And I understand why you do it, to basically prohibit people to do that. But realistically, how many people go to prison? I mean, what's the percentage of people that have LACI Act violations per year that actually go to prison from LACI Act violations? Is it 10%, 5%, 2%? I don't know.
I don't know. Very few.
Yeah. But it's daunting when it's $500,000 for basically knowingly, and we have to prove that we didn't know. And that's how we prove that.
Yeah, I disagree. We have to prove that you knew. You don't have to prove that you didn't know. Now, on an import where somebody throws in something, I think what you're talking about is a CITES violation, where there's something included in the shipment that you didn't know about. That's not LACI Act. That's a CITES. That's an import violation, CITES. Now, if it's an injurious species, then that's a LACI Act violation. But if somebody throws in, I don't know what animal you use, but whatever, an extra turtle or like he experienced, he was referring to CITES violations also. But, and as he said, there's discretion. So, you know, I disagree with you, sir, but we're from different ends of the spectrum.
My last question is,
yes,
pertains to native U.S. animals being exported, tell me why there's no limit.
I'll tell you at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I'll tell you at 1 o'clock. The endangered species.
So let's see, where are we at? We're getting pretty close to lunch, but we're not quite there yet, I don't think.
Did you have a question, sir?
Hundreds. All right, this is getting a lot.
Pick a good one.
What might the Florida Water Conservation District position to get Burmese pythons?
That's a question you need to ask them.
Yeah. I mean, how do they have the authority, being non-biologists, to even recommend a federal ban?
They petitioned. I don't think they recommended it. They petitioned
for the
agency to act.
Yeah. Are they clogging up the drain pipes? I mean,
they petitioned the Fish and Wildlife Service, and they have the right to, and anybody has the right to petition us, because the South Florida Water Management District is responsible for, besides just the water flow in South Florida, is responsible for the restoration of the Everglades. They are one of the agencies, along with the Army Corps, the state of Florida, other parts of the state of Florida, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Park Service, etc., as part of the huge Everglades restoration. And that was one reason they decided that they could not adequately do their jobs to restore the Everglades if the Burmese pythons were going to be coming up and gobbling up all of these rare and endangered species, of which there have been, you know, wood storks, then killer wood rats and things like that, federally threatened endangered species that were found in the guts of Burmese pythons. And the other reason was their staff, their employees who were going out into their remote areas, on the levees and around the canals, were encountering these very large snakes, and they were starting to get worried about their employees. So those were two reasons.
Every one of those examples are state issues.
Yes,
do you know why?
Because they're afraid to go out there and burn down tons of this.
Well, that was within the state of Florida. That was within their rights. This is within your rights. Another example, somebody petitioned U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to do something about something that circumvented Center for Biological Diversity. I don't know how many petitions they've got now. It's well over 100, but they petitioned the federal government to take action on over 100 species on the endangered that are up for endangered species listing. You could make that same petition if you wanted. There's nothing to prevent whether they take action on it or not.
That probably has a lot to do with how much political power you have. But that's not their concern. Their concern is we got a petition by law. We have to follow these steps to come to a conclusion or announce
that one to USGS.
They asked USGS to do the survey to provide data on the petition. Yes?
My question would be this. You don't have to shout. Anyone who thinks the Burmese python ban has anything to do with conservation or human safety is blind. And this is all politics and money. How much money does the Water District in Florida get now from the federal government once the Burmese python was listed as injurious? It's all about money. That's all it's ever been about. And anyone who thinks that this has anything to do with conservation or public safety are fools. Period. That's nothing to do with sex.
And then if I understand correctly, didn't this Burmese problem really occur after a hurricane when a Burmese breeding facility was destroyed?
Hurricane Andrew.
Yeah. Didn't this whole thing come up because of one major hurricane and one major breeding facility?
I prefer to believe it was the 1972 escape of the military python project out in the Everglades. That's my own opinion.
Area 52.
Jeff,
I mean, there's a controversy over that, but 92, Andrew, and of course the first breeding, I think, group was found in Flamingo. And so there's been question of how did these animals ever homestead. There was about 1,000 Burmese that were blown away, eventually then get established in Flamingo. And people have been seeing Burmese and retics and other big snakes since the 70s, speaking to breeders down there and animal dealers since the 70s. And they've been finding individuals scattered about. And there was a very large retic that was taken under someone's house up by the Boca Raton about 20 to 25 years ago. So there have been these individual animals.
Yeah.
And then the Boa District, you know, the Boa District are listed in that USGS report has the least credibility behind it. Because there's a population that has been established here in a state park since the 70s, and it never spread beyond that. And I think it was they could just hand that on to this other group of animals and somewhat sneak it through for whatever reason. I have no idea, because boa constrictors are much more even temperature sensitive than the Burmese pythons. So that to me was contrived.
I have to agree with you. I mean, frankly, if there were going to be boa constrictors, they would come up from Mexico a long time.
They would, because they're 60 miles south of the border in Hermosillo, and they should have made it up into there, and they didn't. That's the northern population, not the tropical ones that are mostly coming into the import trade.